Broadcasting from the Civic Cypher Studios, welcome to the QR Code, where we share perspective, seek understanding, and shape outcomes. He is a very handsome gentleman who is a great orator, and I'm proud to have him as my friend and co-host on the show. He goes by the name of Q Ward.
And he is Ramses Ja, and he likes to talk about himself in the third person and then say my name. He's your host. I just work here.
Well, we need you to stick around because we got a good show in store for you today. Don't know if you know this, but they're canceling elections down in Florida. Ooh wee! This is where we are. This is the worst timeline. We're gonna get into the weeds, of course, and figure out what's going on in Florida, why they're saying they want to do this, and of course, why they are actually doing it. We're also going to share a little bit of a story from an American Idol winner who was offered the key to his city and ultimately had to deny receiving it because of death threats. And since it's in Mississippi, we know that there are some other factors involved as well. We're going to spend a little bit of time for our Better Do Better segment talking about how the cuts, the doging of services throughout this country have ultimately led to the many deaths by the flood in Texas, because now there's no more services to respond to those sorts of things. We're going to talk about Elon Musk establishing a new party. So, you know, we know about the Democrats and we know about the Republicans, but Elon Musk apparently has enough money to change the very nature of politics in this country, and he feels that that is in order. So we're going to talk about that too, and a whole lot more, not the least of which is how we celebrate 4th of July around here. But before we get to any of that, it is time for our feel-good feature. Today's feel-good feature comes from the Huffington Post. Snitching never had a positive connotation, understandably, but a highly scrutinized new app proves that sounding the horn to protect someone vulnerable is a historic form of protest, and it's not going anywhere. IceBlock is a crowdsourcing platform designed to inform and warn communities of the presence of ICE agents. The app functions as a defensive response to recently revved up ICE raids, while also shedding light on the power of collective and strategic information sharing. For all those reasons, it's making the Trump administration big mad. Officially launched this past April, IceBlock came under fire this week when White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt and Acting ICE Director Todd M. Lyons released an official statement critiquing a CNN story covering the app with quotes from its founder Joshua Aaron. The statement refers to CNN's coverage as an advertiser for an app that, quote, basically paints a target on federal law enforcement officers' backs, unquote. It feels a little hypocritical to talk about ICE agents as targets, but okay. Since the statement was released on Monday, IceBlock reportedly rose to the top of Apple's App Store and had over 95,000 users. So, you know, that feels good to us because, you know, people deserve dignity in this country. People deserve due process. And, you know, again, if the government is a hostile government, the people have a duty to resist, and all forms of protest are on the table. And this, I mean, that this tickles my fancy. So let me say it a couple more times just to make these folks mad again. IceBlock, IceBlock, IceBlock. Download it and use it and share the information with other people. So those are my thoughts. Yeah. All right. So let's move on. Q, did you do anything for 4th of July?
Of course not. Like, what are we talking about?
I'm sorry. I was expecting a no, but the of course not filled in so much of the gaps for me. Like, of course not. And I think that that's in line. So for folks listening, what I'm about to share, so I produce this show, and you know, Q's produced the second part of the show, so he doesn't know what I'm about to share with him, but that's so perfect that you said of course not, because and just to get in front of you here, I didn't do anything for 4th of July either. I stayed home and I worked on a project that I'd been wanting to work on. There was really nothing that interested me. But as it turns out, there were a lot of black folks that were feeling kind of deflated And, you know, people, not just black folks, but, you know, marginalized people. I can speak for black folks because there's a lot of black folks in my family and, you know, in my ecosystem, of course. But, you know, to a larger extent, you know, marginalized folks are feeling really disconnected from the American dream and the promises that this country is supposed to hold for all of her citizens and so forth and so on. And so obviously celebrating the 4th of July was, there were some conflicted feelings around the world. But this is not a show about my opinions and what it is that I know. This is a show about, you know, journalism and data and so forth. So I'm going to share a story with you, Q, and I want to get your thoughts here. This is from the Black Information Network. Over 200 years after Frederick Douglass, question, what to the slave is the 4th of July? In an act of resistance to Independence Day, Black Americans are still grappling with how to celebrate freedoms and liberties that haven't been fully granted to them. Friday, July 4th, marked Independence Day, a federal holiday that commemorated the signing of the Declaration of Independence in 1776 and the birth of a free America from Great Britain. The document, primarily authorized by Thomas Jefferson, outlined the colonies' reasons for seeking independence, noting inherent rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The hypocrisy behind the celebration of the 4th of July remains apparent, as not all Americans gained the inherent rights included in the Declaration of Independence in 1776. Millions of black Americans were enslaved at the time and denied independence and life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Core values celebrated every year on the holiday. Enslaved black people weren't legally free until nearly 100 years later, when Abraham Lincoln issued the Emancipation Proclamation in January 1863. Enslaved people in Texas didn't learn of their freedom until over 2 years later on June 19, 1865, which came months before the 13th Amendment officially abolished slavery in the U.S. Despite their legal freedom, black Americans still had to face systemic oppression, discrimination, and racism, which continue to have reverberating effects today. Douglass, an abolitionist, orator, writer, and formerly enslaved person, addressed the hypocrisy of the Independence Day document on July 5th, 1852, delivering a speech titled, What to the Slave is the 4th of July? Douglass was invited to address the citizens of his hometown, Rochester, New York, but defied the expectations of his audience to celebrate the 76th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence. Instead, he used the occasion to remind Americans of the millions of black people still fighting for their freedom in this country. In the speech, Douglass highlighted how enslaved people faced brutal conditions and dehumanization, a direct contradiction to the values outlined in the Declaration of Independence. Quote, are the great principles of political freedom and of natural justice embodied in that Declaration of Independence extended to us? Douglass question. Douglass's speech remains relevant today as black people continue to face police brutality, health disparities, attempted erasure of their history in schools, economic inequality, gentrification, and other systemic issues that go unaddressed by the current administration. Many black Americans declined to celebrate the 4th of July, echoing Douglass's act of resistance. Still, they use the federal holiday to spend time with family, barbecue, and engage in leisure activities, opting out of waving American flags and embracing themes of freedoms that weren't granted to them in 1776. Okay. So you weren't alone, nor was I. Does that tell a little bit of your story, Q?
Once upon a time, that would have been the reason why.
Okay.
Like once upon a time, we would have drew on our past, our history in this country, what our ancestors were doing as the country celebrated its independence. Mm-hmm. Right. The 1776 African was not an African American. It was a slave. Mm-hmm. Property. Not human. The slave race. Less than how people would view their pets now. Because if you hang someone's pet, people look at you like you're a monster.
Sure.
Yeah. If you were to lynch a black person, the white families in attendance would pose for a picture by your hanging body or your burned body with smiles on their faces and enjoy it like a regular family day out. So once upon a time, we would have had to call upon that part of history to be properly offended with the idea of celebrating the independence of this country that we've called home for hundreds of years now. But we no longer have to trace it back to what the fourth would mean to the slave. What should the fourth mean to most of the country today? As the leader of the free world ushers in a new era of bigoted, xenophobic racism, targeting black and brown people from all over the world, making it illegal for people to travel here, making it illegal for the people that are here to be here, whether they're illegal or not, whether they're documented or not, whether they've gone through the proper steps to seek citizenship or not, whether they're seeking asylum or not. Let's make this the least safe, least comfortable, least enjoyable, least protected place in the world for people who aren't white, and let's celebrate it. Let's build concentration camps and sell merch. Let's have politicians hold out on their vote just so they can get an opportunity to meet and shake hands with and get merch from the president. Let's stand up in a full rousing round of applause, standing ovation, as we strip food, resources, and protections away from tens of millions of Americans, the same ones we promised we wouldn't do that so they could vote for us. Let's get into a circle and pray so that we can get God's approval for taking away health care and access to food for children, health care and access to food for elderly. Let's have men with assault rifles invade elementary schools, targeting either children or their parents. Either way, the trauma is irreversible. Let's do all of that while claiming how proud we are to be an American, and shoot off fireworks and have barbecues and have parties and have a good time, pretending all of this isn't happening, this hyper-normalization, this cognitive dissonance. Let's practice all of that on this 4th of July. At the same time that we're protesting No King and ICE raids, let's still wave that flag because it's ours too. And we have something that we have to hold on to, begging this country to love us, right? It's like begging to get in the club in Scottsdale when they've made it clear the reason they don't want you there is because you're black. But let's keep going every week. And if we spend enough money, they'll let us in, right? Let's double and triple down on this place that's screaming at us that you don't belong here, we don't want you here. And we'll go to the furthest extent to make you feel that. I said one time out loud that this guy became president again, that he would bring slavery back. And several people that I knew, or that I know, I'm sorry, responded like I said something insane, as if he hadn't already done everything to let us know that that was a real possibility. Now, it's close to being actual legislation. Because, you know, they can pick you or anybody up off the street, declare you a criminal, arrest, detain, and deport you to some prison that can then have you work for them for free. Or, you know, if you're a farm worker or a hotel worker and you're working in agriculture, he can't just make your boss your owner on paperwork, and that way you're protected. Unless you ever leave that job, then you're not anymore, and ICE can come and get you. Sounds a lot like slavery to me. So did I celebrate on the 4th of July? No.
Yeah, I saw the edit before the no. Wow. Well, I don't mean to pile on. Or maybe this isn't piling on, but, you know, another development in the news is, you know, Elon Musk officially established a third party for, you know, people to vote for. I mean, there's obviously more than two parties, but, you know, it's a two-party system. But Elon Musk is getting a lot of attention because of his capacity to actually fund candidates going up against their, you know, the challengers. Then he's looking to, I guess, unseat a lot of the folks that voted for the big, beautiful bill. So, yeah, here we go. It's from CNN. Billionaire Elon Musk said Saturday he's forming a third political party after a dramatic falling out with Donald Trump, indicating he will make good on threats he made if the president's domestic policy bill became law. Quote, when it comes to bankrupting our country with waste and graft, we live in a one-party system, not a democracy, Trump's former first buddy said on his social media platform, X. Goes on to say, today, the America Party is formed to give you back your freedom, unquote. Musk, the largest individual donor to Trump's 2024 presidential campaign, and until recently a close advisor to the president who spearheaded his administration's push to cut government waste, had criticized Trump's Big Beautiful Bill because of estimates that it would add trillions of dollars to the federal deficit. Musk's criticism of the bill was the catalyst for a major falling out between the two men last month. That feud seemingly cooled after Musk expressed regret and deleted most of the incendiary social media posts he made about Trump. But it reignited in the last several days as the bill neared passage. Trump signed the bill into law on Friday. For his part, Trump called Musk's announcement of the new party ridiculous and said it would sow confusion. Quote, I think it's ridiculous to start a third party. We have a tremendous success with the Republican Party, Trump said ahead of boarding Air Force One in New Jersey on Sunday. Trump goes on to say, the Democrats have lost their way, but it's always been a two-party system, and I think starting a third party just adds to the confusion, unquote. Then he continues, third parties have never worked, so he can have fun with it, but I think it's ridiculous, he added. So, I don't know. I think I have two minds about this, and I'd be interested to get your thoughts here, Q, because on the one hand, first off, I'm not a fan of Elon Musk. Elon Musk is a Nazi, full stop. That's it. Okay. So if I say this next thing, I don't want anyone to misconstrue how I feel about him or Donald Trump. You know, if a duck walks up to me like a duck, looking like a duck, and its social media posts reflect that of a duck, and then it quacks and then says I'm a duck, then that's a duck. And that is the same thing I see with Elon Musk. There's really no two ways about it. So on the one hand, I feel like a lot of Republican legislation is, it's like unsettlingly cruel. A lot of it. Some of it is, you know, based on their sensibilities. Some of it is based on their concerns and fears and their fiscal policy. And so, but some of the bills and some of the execution of the bills is very, very cruel. And it seems like they're aware of it and they kind of like that part. And this started to happen. Do you remember the story that we covered? I think it might have been like South Dakota or one of the states that this show doesn't air in yet, but something like that. And there was a Republican bill to remove school meals, like school lunches, from the school program, and it was targeted at children, right? And it was the same time when Republicans voted to give themselves raises. And they were pushing for some other sort of voucher program. Like there was a combination of things. And then I was like, there's no way, because this is too perfect of a storm. This media must have a bias to it that is lining these elements up to make Republicans look like monsters. So I took the liberty, I don't know if you remember this, but I took the liberty of digging deeper. I'm like, let me see if any of these folks are covering it. And to be fair, not a lot of them are covering it, but ultimately, what I found is that everything that they had written out in legislation was true. And it's like, okay, so you think these children, like you, the poor are going to be with you always. I think that's either from the Bible or one of the founding documents of this country, something like that. But it feels like ancient wisdom, okay? And if you're in politics, you have to deal with that segment of the population, okay? Some people are going to be poor. Even rich people become poor. It happens. And the purpose of a government is to take care of the people, all of the people, okay? So for these folks to do this to a children's nutrition program felt like very hurtful. And after that, I started watching with a much more watchful eye, I guess, more closely at what Republicans were up to. And again, I've noticed a trend, is that a lot of times it's very cruel. I rarely, if ever, see anything even remotely close to that when it comes from, when it comes to the left. But the right, a lot of times, like the ICE raids is a great example. Like due process, come on, that's for human beings. And they're trying to rewrite it as somehow it's just for US citizens. That's not written anywhere. And they will push to fight to try to make that true retroactively, that it was always for citizens. Nope, that's not in the document. What's it's not in the declaration, what is it, the Constitution at all, right? Now, that's my one mind. Republicans are very cruel. So a split in that party means that Republicans, people on the right, have more than one option. They can be the people who are just the fiscal conservatives or whatever, the less cruel version of that. Like the far further right is like the MAGA, Nazi, white supremacist wing. And then the rest of these folks are people that are like, look, I don't really rock with them, but I'm just over here because this is the reality I want to live in. Okay. Now, on the other hand, what we have is another billionaire at the head of another party. Elon Musk is a very influential guy. And a lot of people follow him on social media. A lot of people look up to him like how they look up to Trump. He's daddy, he's whatever. I don't know where the spines are with these people that celebrate these folks. They have such a cavalier attitude toward worshiping another man breathing the same air as them. It's wild to me. And there's no two ways about it. I can only see a billionaire shaping public policy in his own image. It takes a certain type of person to like become a billionaire, right? And those people don't tend to be, like, I actually know billionaires personally. I've been to their houses. I know these people. Good people on the front end when it comes to business stuff, when it comes to what they are about their money. There's no such thing as a nice billionaire that I've met. So, I got mixed feelings. Anything stick out to you?
I'll try. I used to think a third party wasn't possible until MAGA was born. And MAGA was so powerful, it co-opted one of the existing parties.
Sure.
Like, bullied it and took it over. And all it took was some hyper-masculine racism to take an entire party. So, you know, Elon is an interesting messenger, right? He's the cause and the cure. He bought the presidency for the guy he's now criticizing and now saying there needs to be another party for. You know, so let's steal an election. And I don't know what didn't go his way, but then let's become a whistleblower and talk about how this thing isn't set up right for the people who I just defrauded. So yeah, once upon a time, a third party wouldn't work. And even now, maybe you confuse a couple of Republicans who are not sure which of you they want to follow, but Trump is the hero in their story, not Musk. You know, he was a vehicle and a weapon to get them what they wanted. When they started feuding, MAGA didn't turn their back on Trump or split in half between Trump and Musk. They just joined Trump in making fun of Musk and accusing him of being, you know, out of touch, or his feelings are hurt because of the Trump's getting rid of the tax cuts on electric vehicles. Like, they come up with a way for Trump to be the hero and the good guy no matter what. So we'll see, man. You know, you start the fire and then you show up in a coat and a hat with an extinguisher to put the fire out, and we're supposed to applaud for you. Yeah, right. Like, I'm not moved by Elon Musk introducing the idea of a third party.
Yeah. Well, Elon Musk has a problematic legacy. For a long time, Elon Musk was that guy. And then he just rounded that same corner around the same time. A lot of MAGA folks were rounding that corner too. And they just moved super far to the right. So much so that Elon Musk ended up at the head of the Department of Government Efficiency and started making cuts to programs that were needed by this country, right? And there were people that wrote reports about people are going to die, people are going to suffer because of these cuts you're making. There's a reason we're spending these dollars. There's AIDS prevention. There's all kinds of stuff, right? And doging became a verb, right? And then other governmental, like state governments, followed suit. You know, they started to doge, you know, things because, you know, I guess the push for smaller government was the wave, you know, once upon a time. But I'm going to share an article from Alternet that I think kind of lives in the shadow of Elon Musk's legacy in, at first time in the White House. In a scathing social media post, Seth Abramson, biographer of President Donald Trump, directly blamed Trump and his tech billionaire friend Elon Musk for the deaths of more than 50 Texans in recent catastrophic flooding, arguing their politically driven decisions led to avoidable tragedy. Quote, I have no difficulty saying that Trump and Musk caused some of the 50-plus flood deaths in Texas, unquote. Abramson wrote in a widely shared thread on social media platform X. Quote, and here's why. These two men with no expertise in disaster preparedness were told not to cut the positions they cut and were told people would die if they did, and then people died, he said. Abramson's remarks come amid growing scrutiny of public service cuts made in Republican-led states where disaster readiness programs have been downsized or gutted. In Texas, where flash floods have left at least 50 people dead, analysts and former emergency managers have raised concerns that early warning systems, regional FEMA coordination, and infrastructure resilience have been compromised due to staffing and budget reductions. Abramson urged Democratic leaders to take a more forceful stance over the tragedy. Quote, Democrats are never going to start winning elections again until they're willing to call a thing just what it is, unquote, he wrote. Goes on to say Texas Democrats should be clear and persistent in saying that public service cuts overseen by non-experts, desperate for billionaire tax cuts, killed people, unquote. He preemptively addressed Republican rebuttals, accusing Democrats of politicizing tragedy. Quote, and if Republicans respond by saying that Democrats are politicizing these deaths, the Democrats should respond, that's because the deaths are political. Politicians caused them, unquote. And then real quick, the rest of the time is yours here if you want it. But I think that there's something to be said about climate change, too. And that's only going to get worse. And obviously, this administration's approach to climate change is, it leaves a lot to be desired. But your thoughts here, Q.
We're so weak.
What do you mean?
Like, they make a direct decision that kills people. And then we say, hey, hey, don't, you know, let's not make this political. You know, like, people are hurting and, you know, this is not the time. Then when's the time? When's the time to point to the direct result of your actions was people dying? If not when it happens. And they only do that to us, and every time we fold like a napkin. Well, I guess you're right. This isn't the time for us to point out that the thing that we said, if you do, people are going to die, and then you did it and people died, that's not the time to point out that it happened.
Yeah.
That's not the time to call a spade a spade. We're so weak and soft, and we're holding on to these ideals of decency and the way we've always done things. Well, they clearly don't play the game by those rules, clearly. And they keep showing us that. Bully tactics from weak people. And then we show up and we got to take the high road. You know, it's just this is not the time to point the finger. And let's not make this political. Thoughts and prayers because people died. Yeah. If you gut the service that tells us when something deadly could happen to people, that thing happens. And then people die, we should be able to point to that as a failure by you and as you being responsible for the lives that were lost. We did that once before, and it probably ushered that guy out of office. But, you know, back to political norms, back to politeness, back to taking the high road as they continue to backstab and lie and cheat and steal. And we continue to watch it. Maybe we've just accepted that there's nothing we can do. Like, maybe that's where we are now. I don't understand how we soften up when they bring to the front a tray with their failures on it. Their failures that we called out before they happened, and then we're not allowed to say they happened when they do. Because, you know, now isn't the right time. it's too soon. Don't make this very political thing political. Ignore climate change, pretend it doesn't exist, and gut all the organizations that predict and respond to natural disasters. And then when people die, throw your hands up like we don't know what happened.